Welcome back to Take Care, Jane. It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Will you explain how compassion fatigue is different than burnout?
Yes. First of all, I'm going to use two terms today, caregiver and care receiver. Compassion fatigue is caused by empathy. Empathy is a good thing. It's understanding and having a sense of what it must be like to be in someone else's shoes. But it becomes a slippery slope when the caregiver starts to take on the emotional burdens of the care receiver. When you're exposed to someone's suffering and even the negativity of things day to day, you can then become preoccupied with the care receiver's situation. Even when you're not with them, that person seems to be on your mind. It makes it difficult to go to sleep at night without all those thoughts going on in your head. It's the juggling of the demands of home and family and work and, you know, personal life, your health and all that. It becomes stressful and overwhelming, and you start dropping the ball on some responsibilities. And then one of the clinchers is the caregiver's health starts to take a back seat and is no longer on the list of things to do. And gradually that empathy becomes numb and insensitivity toward the care receiver's needs and situation. You're basically on autopilot. You're tuning out. Burnout is when that slippery slope leads to crash and burn. It's when the needs of the care receiver are much greater than the caregiver can give. The demands of your time, your energy, and your ability are well beyond what you can respond to. And effectively, their safety, providing the meals, feeding, bathing, lifting, moving, sleep, all those things, medications, treatments, are far more than you can handle. And when you continue to expect that you can do more than is realistic to accomplish, you're in the danger zone. When you have to give 24/7 care for someone's welfare and safety, you can't effectively sleep with one eye open at night.
So it sounds like, Jane, compassion fatigue and burnout have a lot of overlap, a lot of responsibilities on the caregiver's part that can be very draining. But the thing that makes the compassion fatigue different is that, like you were saying, you're empathizing with the person or situation, and that in itself is emotionally draining. If you could take a step back and not care as much and compartmentalize for your own mental health, that would protect you. But in so many cases, that's so hard to do.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, for one thing, people want to help. They want to fix things. And when there's that sense that they can't fix this, they keep trying a little harder, do a little bit more, taking on what this person is experiencing, and that doesn't help. That goes from being splashed by someone's situation to being hit with a tidal wave. And you're overwhelmed, and you can no longer function as well as you need to.
So who is the person that would be most likely to experience compassion fatigue?
Any one of us can end up experiencing compassion fatigue. It can creep in slowly and subtly. Even when you think, you know, you have a professional background in how these things can happen, there's that tendency to want to do a little more and a little more. And when someone says, "How's it going?" and you start saying, "Oh, I'm managing," that throws up flags to me. That's a sign that there's struggles going on and there are poor boundaries between taking care of themselves and taking care of others.
And it's so easy to feel guilty that you're not doing as much as you can. You want to visit more. You should be calling the doctor more, or whatever it is that you think you could do more of. You always feel guilty. What type of advice would you give someone who's listening right now who feels those feelings of guilt?
It's real easy to get caught up in not enough when it comes to caregiving. That's the slippery slope. Oftentimes, women struggle with this more than men, but I don't even want to go down that road. I mean, it really varies from individual to individual. It's when we expect that we can do it all, or that we have to do it all, and we have to do it with a smile on our face, that we need to fix these situations, and we just can't. A bigger issue, I think, in the guilt is sometimes when you experience how awful it must be to be in their situation, and you're no longer able to appreciate how good your personal life is. it starts to bleed into feeling guilty about having a day to yourself or 10 minutes to yourself. That can be very difficult. There's the guilt of parenting the parent. You know, when your parents have been part of taking care of you, and now all of a sudden you're having to say no to them, or no, I'm going to that medical appointment with you, or maybe this is a time to stop driving, Dad. It can get very dicey, and you feel guilty about putting boundaries on them, guilty about placing mom or dad or the child who has extreme needs in professional care. There's that, I've heard this with family members, you know, oh, it'll kill them if we put them in the nursing home, or it'll kill me if you put me in the nursing home. And it turns out that they actually have a pretty positive experience once they adjust.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And our guest today is Jane Pernato-Ehrman of the Cleveland Clinic. She's the lead behavioral health specialist at the Cleveland Clinic Center for Lifestyle Medicine in the Wellness Institute. And our discussion revolves around caregiver compassion fatigue. Jane, you've been talking about the guilt that people feel if they believe they need to do more, but there is another side of this coin, and sometimes if it involves chronic care of someone who has issues, is ill, and there is no end in sight, sometimes resentment can crop up. So how does a caregiver manage those feelings of resentment toward the person they're caring for, and does it eventually impact the care?
Oh, yes. First of all, that's a serious warning sign when you start to feel resentful for what this person's needs are. It's a sign that you're not taking care of yourself, that you're not getting enough space and time away, time to care for your own needs. And that can, if it's not taken care of, can end up with being so overwhelmed that you become verbally abusive and yell at them and physically abusive, where you shake them or grab them or even strike them. That's maybe more extreme, but you know, it can happen in a heartbeat to the most educated people when they are pushed to their limits and beyond.
What's the advice that you give both the care receiver and the caregiver when they're having problems communicating? Maybe the care receiver is stuck at home and is actually flinging some guilt on the provider and saying, mm-hmm. I wish you could be here more, do more. And they have tension and arguments, actually, that may predate even the episodes. Maybe they've had tension throughout life. What type of interventions do you recommend to get them both to understand each other's point of view?
That's a great question. And it's a tough one to answer. Communication is a huge issue oftentimes. The care receiver can become quite demanding. And it's important for the caregiver to recognize what's that care receiver's issues and what are your own. So that, you know, part of their anger and demanding as a care receiver is that they've lost their independence. They have grief and loss issues about the changes that have occurred in their lives. And they lash out. And of course, it's easier to lash out on someone who's there, who you're counting on, because they're not probably going to walk out. It would help if you can engage a professional, a physician, for that care receiver to be part of that conversation, to sometimes play the heavy. You know, look, it's time for you to move into a care facility. This is too much. Your needs are greater. For your safety, you need to go into assisted living or the nursing home. Your family member cannot provide this. To have somebody else be that heavy, and to also have at a calm moment a conversation, a frank conversation between the two of you to say, here's what I need so that I can take better care of you. And can you hear me on that? How can we work this out?
What about the concept of having a safety net under you in terms of respite care? Because it seems that respite care, A, is good for the caregiver, and B, introduces the care receiver to the idea that it may not be a family member or loved one caring for me around the clock. And also, too, once you're connected to a community like that, it seems to open more doors in terms of the transition if you need to go to care by professionals.
That's an excellent point, and one that is really important. Yes, get respite care. Even if it, you know, the person is all upset, no, I don't want anybody else, do it. Get someone that you have peace of mind about. There are some wonderful facilities in different areas. Check them out, talk with them, and make space for that. Or have a family member come in and stay for an afternoon or a day or a weekend so that you can get away. You're right. It does give that space to realize that there are other people that can help with some needs. Other people sometimes feel very good about being able to help in that way. And it does open the door to conversation about making that transition of, I can't be the caregiver for you always or forever. We have to look at options here.
What are some other steps the caregiver can take just for self-preservation and good mental and physical health?
It's important to ask for help. Too often, I see caregivers who believe they have to do it all. Ask for help. Take help that is offered to you. Get some counseling. You know, too often people think, I don't need counseling. You know, I'm a strong person. And it's actually the wise ones who get counseling to get a bigger perspective of things. Join a support group. If your care receiver has Alzheimer's or some spectrum of dementia or other issues for which there are support groups, join a support group. Go take a class on stress relief tools. Join a meditation group. Take a yoga class. Go for exercise. Take other avenues to help meet your needs and get some space where you can be off and away from the situation for a while.
How do you, I'll ask this delicately. It always seems that in a family, there tends to be one adult child who takes on the burdens of most of the care. How do you pull in other siblings, other family members, when you feel that caregiver compassion fatigue is hitting you and you need to meaningfully communicate that to other family members?
Boy, that's a tough and delicate issue, but it's one where there absolutely must be communication and conversation. You need to speak your truth. Here's what's happening. I need help. Have a family meeting and have a list. Here are the issues that need to be addressed. Respite care, meals coming in, appointments to the doctor and those kinds of things. Pick one or two or three that you will take responsibility for. Or maybe they won't take those responsibilities. Will they give the financial support so that you can get those kinds of services paid for? Holding on to that anger really affects your health, and it affects everybody because it falls off us. We can't just keep that one in, and it's dangerous. So I think communication and being honest about what's happening is really important.
Jane Pernato-Erman of the Cleveland Clinic. She's the lead behavioral health specialist at the Cleveland Clinic Center for Lifestyle Medicine in the Wellness Institute. Again, Jane, thanks so much for your insight.
You're welcome. Thank you again for having me.